I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on April 11th, 2024. We'll get started with our first bill presentation. Chair Fisher, thank you for being here today. So House File 3411 on AFREC. Welcome to the committee, Chair Fisher. I move that House File 3411 be laid over for possible inclusion. Trigger bill.
Thank you, Chairman Vang, and to the committee for the opportunity to present House File 3411. This bill is to extend the Minnesota Agriculture, Fertilizer Research, and Education Council fee, also known as MAFREC, out for the next 10 years. It's set to expire currently. This fee is very important. It does a lot of funding. It's basically a tax onto the industry that produces nitrogen to make sure that we are funding research at the University of Minnesota to find the best management practices on the landscape to make sure that we're using nitrogen in a responsible way and make sure that it's helping address our crop output to make sure that we're getting the proper output as we can to maximize the one and maximize crop output and reduce the amount of damage that it would have in our waters in the state. This is something that's very important. I've heard a lot about the use of the fee over the last 10 years. I serve on the Subcommittee on Water, which is a joint commission between the House and the Senate, where we talk a lot about water quality. And one of the things that we found out over the years is the research of the that's been done at the U has gone on is we've been finding that when the best practices are put into practice that have come out of this research in the past, we've seen noticeable improvements in water quality coming off the fields and in practices that were used in wellhead protection management areas managed by the Department of Health. They could see a very short term at the upper aquifers that they could see a noticeable difference in the amount of nitrogen that was ending up in the waters, and the water quality was improving. Part of the problem that we have a nitrate issue out in our landscape. A lot of it is in aquifers that are quite a bit older. I've always been a little bit skeptical over time because I've heard at times people mentioning, well, we're using much more fertilizer in tons than we've had in the past. I asked this specific question back in the Subcommittee of Water hearing that we had back in December. I was concerned if we're using best management practices, why are we seeing more tonnage used? And one of the answers that came back to me, which made a lot of sense, is that one of the things that we're seeing these days is that while we've got more tonnage being used, is the amount of nitrogen in the tonnage is dropping substantially. There are different levels of nitrogen and different types of fertilizer. And what we're finding is that they're using a lot more fertilizer with the lower content, and that's one of the things that's having a big improvement. One of the things that comes through the research out there. One of the other things I also know is that having listened over time is that a lot of the low-hanging fruit, the easy stuff that we're able to figure out very quickly, we've been able to grab onto that, but there's the work that's being done now is the research takes a lot of time. Is when we're taking a look at how does climate impact things, and we've got such a change in climate, you don't get the climate variations that we've had in the past, and as a result, it can take a number of years before you can see, are we going to see what is really happening in the climates out there, which impacts how much fertilizer we're going to need out on the landscape. And these are the things that can take 5 or 10 years now. We're moving from a point in time where a lot of the research was in a couple of years, but now we need a longer landscape to make sure that we're getting a wider scope of what is happening with climate and other variables that are occurring, making sure that we're taking a look, how does that affect when we're factoring soil health, components that help address soil health. So this is why I'm very strong supporter of making sure that we continue that research out there, because we want to make sure we have that longer time frame, because to get researchers to do this work, they're not going to do the work if the research needs 5 years, but they're only going to be hired for 2 or 3 years. And so that's why I feel it's very important to go out the 10 years. For that, I will stop. I know there's a couple of testifiers, and then it'll open up for questions.
All right. Our first basically both our testifiers on via Zoom. So our first one will be Tom Cotter from Land Stewardship Project. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed. Okay. I believe he's not on yet. So the next one is Grant Anderson, chair from AFREC Council. If you can identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, thanks for the introduction, and thanks for the opportunity to allow me to testify from the convenience of my farm office. I was out in the tractor this morning, and we're getting real near corn planting time, so we're busy on the farm. Again, my name is Grant Anderson, and I am the chairman of the AFREC board, the AFREC Funding Council. I represent the Irrigators Association on that council. And I also am a part of the fifth generation to operate our family farm out in the Belgrade, Brewton area, west central Minnesota. Really want to pledge our support for the bill that stands in front of you, and really appreciate Representative Fisher bringing it to the attention. He did a real nice job outlining the research and the work that's gone on. To throw in there, all of those the funding mechanism for this council is that of a user tax, if you will, that we as farmers each pay 40 cents per ton of fertilizer that we purchase, and those dollars get collected at the retailer level and administered by the Department of Ag then. So on our farm, that fee cost my farm $700 last year, but I think that truly a lot of very good research, instrumental research and fertility research around the state is being done with those monies, and I see it firsthand being on that council. So I think Representative Fisher did a really good job explaining how the council strives to make sure that not only are we advancing fertility research in terms of increasing yield and increasing things like nitrogen use efficiency, but also making sure we're being good stewards of the land and water and environment along the way. So making sure that we're not leaching nitrate into the groundwater table. A lot of those studies are things that the AFRAC Council has funded in the past and will continue to in the future. So I guess with that, we just to make mention, we have letters of support from every one of the farmer organizations that are represented on the AFRAC Council, as you probably have all seen. Also, both the Crop Retail Association and AgriGrowth have posted letters of support to the website. So with that, I'll stand for questions, but I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Mm-hmm. Our next testifier is Tom Cotter from Land Stewardship Project. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed. And Tom, if you're speaking, you're muted right now.
Yep. There we go. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm Tom Cotter in Southern Minnesota. And I'm on here representing myself as a farmer and actually a regenerative farmer. I'm on the Minnesota Soil Health Coalition Board and a member of the LSP. And I am on here to talk a little bit about this new bill. And I really feel the importance of following these practices that are they're on here. And really, there's five principles to soil health. And when you just do one or two of them, you really fall short of the end goal, and that is protecting the environment and making the farmers self-sufficient and, you know, not reliable on other entities for heavy fertilizer use, heavy insecticide, heavy pesticide use. And so I really would like to see these principles or goals of, you know, reducing tillage, implementing cover crops, using precision data to apply the right amount of fertilizer. Just yesterday I talked to a farmer who's applying 200 pounds of nitrogen. I'm applying 120 or less, and we're still hitting the same goals. So we can talk all we want on precision, but if you're not following the practices, the principles, they're only as good as what you follow. And so I really hope that we can follow three of the guidelines: reducing tillage, using covers, and using precision to help us implement this. And I really like to see this too when it's given to the farmers, that we implement an education source, because too many times, and I've been doing this for 25 plus years, too many times when you give farmers money, they use the program, but they need to learn. And they get into a bad spot, we're putting too much cover crops or not knowing. So I really would like to see, if money is given, make sure there's education base behind it and make sure they get to winter classes to learn more about this, because it's so hard to just go out and jump in full force without learning. And I would also like to see, you know, this 40 cents, instead of going off and doing more research, it's been done since 2008, get the money in the hands of the farmers, you know, with on ground, in boots, local education, we can put that money into the farmer's hand and make a bigger difference, I feel. And you know, I'm on the Minnesota Soil Health Coalition, a member of the LSP. I really have been around the state and talked to quite a few people. Organic farmers, 40% of what I do, 60% conventional. And the more you do these practices, the better it gets. But if you're only doing one or two of them, you're going to fall short. So that's what I'd like to give to you today. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Cotter. Not seeing any further testifiers, so we'll move to discussion to the bill. I believe there's another testifier. If you can identify yourself before the committee proceed.
Chair Vang, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Pagel. I'm the District 1 Director for Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation, as well as a dairy farmer from the Karst region in southeast Minnesota. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today in strong support of House File 3411. Since its creation, the Ag Fertilizer Research and Education Council has played a critical role in supporting the needs of farmers through its research, education, and outreach initiatives that address the key challenges and opportunities in agriculture. This council and its exceptional work is a direct reflection of the collaboration between the major agricultural groups in our state. I'm fortunate enough to represent Minnesota Farm Bureau on the council and have seen firsthand the impact that the funding from this council has had on fertilizer research. Each meeting we are presented with updates on different projects, have the opportunity to interact with researchers and see actual field trials. We have many robust conversations with our diverse board members on the council. Each member comes from a different agriculture group and has a unique perspective when it comes time to talking about the funding for each of these different projects. It truly is farmer-directed research. I'd like to express our strong support for the extension of the council and the tonnage fee that funds its projects. The council's outreach efforts are critical to our members, especially as we make strides in addressing and finding results to improve levels of nitrates found in our groundwater. Farmers have and always will be and will continue to be a part of the solution. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the bill and our commitment to improving our soils, clean water, and economic vitality in the farming community.
Thank you for your testimony. Any final testifiers before we move to discussion? Seeing none, discussion from the committee to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Fisher, thank you for bringing the bill forward today. It's been kind of a struggle to get her here, but thank you for getting the bill here and getting it heard. Hopefully it can be included in our final bill. But, you know, it's interesting that this program is not asking for any state funding. It's a self-funded program. I believe it takes in about $1.2 million a year from anybody that buys fertilizer, but mainly farmers, because of the tonnages they use, are the ones that contribute most to this fund. And we've heard testimony about the research being done, and especially at this time when we're really focusing on nitrate issues in water, it does not seem to be the time to move away from this program. And you mentioned some good programs, good statistics you're seeing in terms of improvement, even in the short term, with the nitrate levels in some of the water. So I strongly support this program and would encourage the committee to include it in its final bill and to extend this program for another 10 years, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, it's interesting in these discussions, everybody talks about nitrates and water quality, but the purpose of this fund is production. Production. And that can be funded somewhere else.
Further, Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Yeah, I'd say of the different bills that have been brought forward, the amount of constituents that have reached out to me about the support for this bill has been more vigorous than just about any other bill. So thank you for bringing the bill forward. the amount of work being done on looking at updating best management practices, economic impacts. This is it's a vital resource to our agricultural community, and I appreciate you bringing it forward, and hope it moves forward into a bill in the future. So thank you.
Okay. Seeing no further, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Need some WD-40 here, I think. But anyway, I would add just one word to Representative Hansen's description to fit my description. I would say efficient production. We're trying to efficiently utilize nutrients more and, increase production, but also use those nutrients more efficiently. And that goes hand in hand, in my opinion, with what we're trying to do here. So thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, closing remarks, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. I feel that this is an important way to address several issues out there, not just production and efficiency, but also the fact that taking a look at the water quality aspect. I know that's one of the things I've heard from farmers and from people involved with that is one of the things they're incorporating in, and that's one of the things I appreciate about the council is that with the input that they're receiving from all corners of the state and different groups is that they're expanding out and taking a look, how can we get both working together? And that's the important thing that we have to take a look at is, besides production, is taking a look at what are all the tools that we have available for our toolbox to improve water quality and to be able to use all those together to help solve the issues that's facing our state while keeping a strong agriculture economy out there. I want to thank you for the opportunity and hope that you'll include this in your bill.
All right, and with that, House File 3411 is laid over. Thank you, Chair Fisher. Our next bill is House File 5147, Representative Purcell. Whenever you're ready, Representative Purcell, you can move your bill and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 5147 for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus.
All right. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope this is an easy bipartisan bill to define honey in the way that our federal government defines honey. We have seen honey products coming into predominantly from overseas, coming into our markets. And there's basically a loophole in the definition of honey, which allows for the sale of economically motivated alterations to honey. So perhaps starting with honey and then adding water and sweeteners. And of course, then that becomes a cheaper product than our Minnesota grown and our U.S. grown honey that our farmers are producing. And so this bill aims to close a loophole to make sure that we are labeling honey as such, and things that are honey mixed with other things are also labeled clearly to protect our farmers and our the folks who take care of bees and produce this product.
All right. I don't see any testifiers. Any testifier from the public that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to discussion. Discussion to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Just wondering, Representative Purcell, you mentioned the possibility of things being added to honey to make it not as consistent a product as we'd like to have it be. If somebody does that and tries to sell it, would that already be against FDA or Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act regulations?
Representative Purcell?
It's my understanding that that is the case, at least how it is labeled federally as now, and right now as a state, that would not be the case. So that's sort of that loophole, is there's a discrepancy between the Minnesota definition and the federal definition at this current moment, which is what this is trying to fix.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. You know, we have labeling situations with pesticides and such, but wouldn't the federal label in this case supersede a state label?
Representative Purcell.
Yes, I would hope so. And this is a little bit of a preventatory, if these EMA, these economically motivated alterations, were to change at the federal level, we would still be protecting Minnesota farmers and Minnesota honey grow producers.
Further questions? Representative Cha.
Thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. You know, I was, I've bought some fake syrup honey in my time or so, and I did the research and I found out that there was a lot of honey that was being imported from overseas that was not really honey. It was just sugar syrup. Just so that this committee knows, half the circulation of honey in Europe is just sugar syrup. It's not even honey. And so this is an important issue, so I'm glad you're bringing it forward. And, you know, we need to protect our American honey. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Chair Vang. In a previous iteration of my professional life, I was a children's food educator, and I would bring in honey actually in the comb into classrooms, and I would say probably 95% of my students in elementary schools all across the Twin Cities Metro had never had that, you know, honey in a comb, and if they'd had actual real honey, they didn't know it came from a comb. They had some vague connection with bees, and so I think that this is a very simple bill with potentially great implications to support our Minnesota farmers and keeping it local and making sure that we're transparent with the consumers too, that they know exactly what they're buying and not something else. So thank you for your support.
All right. And with that, House File 5147 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, our next one is House File 4989. This will be an informational hearing, as if the committee members, last time we heard this bill, it was moved out of committee to, I believe, environment. And so it's not in our possession, so we're just going to give informational hearing to the DE1. And so I see that there's the A3 amendment. So, Representative Purcell, if you can talk about the A3 amendment.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Vang. So, since you last saw me here talking about this bill, the co-authors, Representative Kraft, Representative Olson, and I have continued to work extensively with partners, with other members, with the Department of Ag. We made a lot of the changes of things that were brought up here at this meeting, so thank you. That was a really, really helpful hearing. So the bill looks quite different now than it did last time. One of the big changes is removing up those statewide goals. That was causing some confusion and some consternation. Another one of the big changes, folks in the Department of Ag came to my office and said, you know what, we read your bill. If this is a thing that's going to happen, we think we could be more efficient in keeping it here in-house because we're already asking the department to do things like look into what a carbon market might look like. So then to not need to involve the Board of Water and Soil Resources, as well as then sort of make clear with a title change that this is a pilot program in the KARST, and this is... just as a refresher, taking that 40 cents on the ton of fertilizer, the bill Representative Fisher just presented, so taking that fund, not increasing any of the fees, but just taking those fees and applying them to soil health practices in the southeast part of the state in the KARST region. The A3 amendment to the DE amendment was further refinement, predominantly with the Department of Agriculture, to make sure that this program, if nestled inside the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, then addresses those privacy issues that were also brought up at the last hearing. And I'm trying to think if there are other pieces of this that needs to be explained. I'm happy to... field questions about how the bill looks in its current shape at this moment.
Okay. So we have three testifiers listed here, so we'll go with our testimony, and then we can have member discussion. So our first testifier is Dr. Carrie Jennings from Freshwater. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Chair Vang, members, Dr. Carrie Jennings, Research and Policy Director at Freshwater. I'm here again to support this bill in its current form because we know that these practices, when put together, will work. And since this is my third time testifying in front of you, I'm going to use an extended metaphor instead of just throwing more science at you. This part of the state is like a patient in the emergency room after a lifetime of bad health practices. And there are things that we need to do right now on the ground in order to get them into a stable situation. So we need more farmers in the region to adopt two or three of these soil health practices so that we can address the immediate crisis. Sure, we would love to see them change everything about the way they farm, but that's kind of pie in the sky at this point. We just need the bulk of the farmers to adopt these practices in order to get that part of the state out of this urgent situation they find themselves in now. So we are fully in support of these changes. We believe that there needs to be ongoing monitoring when these practices are implemented because that's the only way we'll know if we're restoring the soil health. We also believe this sets a fundamental change in the way we're acting here. We're using land management practices to improve water quality and climate, and that is a shift that we need to see in this state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Jennings. Good to see you again. Our next testifier is Jeff Pagel from the Farm Bureau Federation. Okay. My apologies. So our next testifier is Ariel Kagan from Minnesota Farmers Union.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ariel Kagan, and I lead the Climate and Working Lands Program at the Minnesota Farmers Union. We want to thank the author for the amendment and have appreciated working with her on these changes. We previously shared and continue to support the committee's consideration of multiple approaches to soil health and water quality. Many of these practices and approaches also enhance the landscape's resilience to climate change, which is important to our members as well. For example, improved soil health helps retain and absorb precipitation, which is increasingly important as we begin to face both drought and more increased heavy storms. We appreciate that this amendment allows for more flexibility in conservation practices and gives agency staff more discretion in the program design, both of which we see as valuable additions to the bill. We are also supportive of the approach of the MDA convening a stakeholder working group to consider the proposal of a state-level carbon credit market. The market for carbon credits is quickly shifting, both from the private sector and the regulatory framework regarding these markets, and so hearing from multiple sectors and stakeholders is one way to assess the opportunities and challenges of this approach. We look forward to continued conversation with the author and committee on the appropriate funding source for this program, which we are concerned about as it relates to maintaining the important work of AFRIC in the future. You'll see in your packet a letter of support of a clean reauthorization of AFRIC that our president, Gary Wordish, signed on to. We would also like to understand the approaches to monitoring and data collection included in the bill and how that relates to current data collection efforts underway by local and state agencies. But we want to thank you, Representative Purcell, for your work on this and the committee for your consideration of the bill and continued work on issues that address environmental resource concerns. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ariel. And with that, we'll move to I don't believe I haven't seen any more testifiers. Any final testifiers from the public? Seeing none, we'll move to discussion to the DE1 and then, I guess, relating to the A32 as well. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Representative Purcell, last time that you were here, we talked about minimal till. And I'm looking, was that included then in the new language?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will look at that too because there have been so many iterations of this bill. Maybe research can help me out in this version to put Mr. Sullivan on the spot here.
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and members, no, as amended, the bill still talks about no-till and strip-till only.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I would just reiterate, if we could look at having that option, that would be great, because I know many farmers that do use minimal till based upon their soil on that. And my other question has to do with this carbon credit market, I'm unfamiliar with that. Is this a program that people in ag would have to opt in, opt out? Is there a penalty involved somewhere in this if a farmer fails to do whatever is asking of this particular part of the bill? Thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Harder. That gets to the point that I sort of skipped over in my initial sort of the big changes in the bill. So thank you for bringing this up so I can be clear about this. So what we decided to do in this version, as one of the testifiers mentioned, is to create a working group to look at what a carbon market would be. The idea is this is all voluntary. The idea would be that the farmers would be able to opt in to this without, we're not talking about penalties or anything, but trying to create, we've had conversations like with Cargill, I think maybe General Mills, some of these private companies, CFS, who have their own carbon credit programs, and trying to see if, because we know we need a scale much larger than they are currently doing to fully address the climate crisis and having farmers and land use be a really key part in addressing that for our state. Having the commission is to sort of look at exactly how we would structure that and how we would be incentivizing farmers to do that. And so instead of just telling the Department of Agriculture, like in the previous iteration of the bill, figure out about a carbon market or carbon bank, we're saying, let's gather some people from private industry who've already been doing this, some, you know, actual growers who can say how this may or may not work for them from around the state, and have that group of people put their heads together to figure out what it might look like. And right now it's really unformed because the task, if this were to be included, would be gather that group of people and have them tell us how this may or may not work for the state. I hope that clarifies where we are currently.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I just want to make mention that with working groups, there is some value to that in many areas. But I just want to caution that sometimes we form these working groups at the state, and then all of a sudden it comes down as a form of a requirement or a mandate. And I just don't want something to be started which will hamper more of our people that are in agriculture, making it more difficult to farm. That's just my comment on that as you work forward on that particular group. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Representative Harder. I agree, and I'm glad we now have on the record that is the intention of both of us on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Cha.
Thank you, Representative Harder, for that question. Mine is kind of on the same lines of that. Is there somebody here who can give us an example of an existing carbon market that can kind of clarify how that works in theory?
Representative Purcell,
maybe some brave person can stand up. I know testifier Ms. Kagan, who was here, she works with a group of industry folks through Farmers Union. So maybe you can speak to that, or we have folks from the Department of Agriculture as well.
All right, someone got voluntold. Welcome to the committee if you can identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Again, my name is Ariel Kagan. I lead the Climate and Working Lands Program at the Minnesota Farmers Union. So a carbon market has sort of come out of the demand from the private sector to offset their emissions to be in line with the global goals around reducing our atmospheric carbon dioxide in response to global warming. So companies that have emissions that are unable to reduce those emissions look to offset them by buying credits in the form of, in this case, it would be carbon that's stored in the soil and is a durable and verified amount of carbon that has been sequestered from the atmosphere and then is sold to a company to offset their emissions. So an example of that would be an airline that has emissions and they want to offset those by buying credits from farmers who are able to sequester that carbon in the soil. That's one example of how some of those markets work. And then there's a number of other sort of iterations of that that are developing where companies are looking to reduce the emissions within their supply chains. And so they're looking to actually work with the growers that are selling the the corn into the supply chain to reduce emissions, and that has value for their company as well. So there's a few different ways that these markets are developing, and that's why I personally am supportive of the idea of a stakeholder group to help flesh out some of those for what it could mean for the state.
Representative Chow.
Are there currently any state programs across the 50 states that is having a carbon market that's kind of overseen by the state? Or are all these private carbon markets?
I'm not. Thank you, Chair Vang. I'm not aware of any state markets, but I can check on that and also phone a friend. Yeah.
Representative Cha, or I see someone approaching the table, possibly. You can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you. Brad Jordahl, Redland, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Very brief point to be made, but just been in discussion with the state of Michigan, who has a carbon, public carbon market, but that's primarily based through their Department of Natural Resources and for forestry.
Okay. Representative Chalk.
Thank you for the reply. And, you know, oftentimes you talk about the carbon market and stuff like this, but it's usually in the private sector, and today we're talking about a program administered by the state of Minnesota, so I'm just kind of curious, so thanks for the reply. But, you know, thanks for exploring the possibilities to solve our nitrate problem. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a series of questions, but first just a comment on the carbon market thing. There's a lot of private carbon markets out there. They're complicated, and the biggest complaint I hear from farmers is that they don't pay enough. And I think the last thing I would want to see is a state-run carbon market. The private industry is the way to go on this, where you can talk directly with people from Cargill or CHS or whomever, but I think we need to let our private sector work on this and to develop whatever they think is appropriate. But a state-run market would take a lot of administration costs by the department. And that's one of my questions on your bill here. First of all, though, the number one question, I just had a chance to look through your bill, and we're talking about an additional 40 cents. So would you explain that to us?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson. That is not the intention of the bill. That's news to me. The idea is that this is budget neutral. This is just redirecting those funds that currently go to the AFREC program, taking that 40 cent per ton to a different program. So if that is the case, then that is an error that we will correct. Can you tell me what line and page?
5.2.
Okay, page 5, line 2. Thank you.
I'm assuming this is on the DE one?
Yeah.
Mr. Sullivan?
Madam Chair and members, just to clarify a bit, on 5.2, the additional 40 cents, that's really just mirroring language in current law that refers to the AFREC 40 cents as an additional 40 cents on top of the inspection fee. So if you look on 4.29, the 40 cent current AFREC fee is referred to as an additional 40 cents per ton. So the DE1 amendment doesn't increase another 40 cents, it just takes that 40 cents from the AFREC fee and dedicates it for a different purpose.
Right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that clarification. I thought it was an additional 40 cent fund when you kept talking about that. So is it your intent that the AFREC funding source be eliminated for AFREC?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson. Yes.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That surprises me. On the day that we hear the bill to extend the fund, we hear another bill to do away with the fund. As has been mentioned, it has strong support from the ag community. And because of that reason alone, I have some doubts about the bill, personal concerns. Just a couple other questions about language in the bill. I read someplace there it says organic production is one way to increase soil health. Not sure I understand why organic production would increase soil health. Can you help me out with that one?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lee Anderson, can you help with the page number and line as well? And I might have the department come up as we worked on this.
It's on.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, it's on page 1, line 18. One of the practices to increase soil health. And I guess the reason I bring that up, organic production, you use mechanical tillage to take care of weed control. So you have to work the soil several more times because you're not using pesticides on that soil. And in some ways, it's more prone to erosion, that type of thing. So just wondering how that could help increase soil health.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson. I will say, having firsthand experience, organic production may or may not have that kind of tillage and mechanization. And beyond that, I'm not sure if there's someone from the department or I can phone a friend. The main thing that we're trying to do is, because the science tells us that it is that stacking benefits. So trying to have a menu of options and make sure that folks are doing, you know, at least two of the options. That was also a change. The previous iteration of the bill had at least three. So having at least two of these practices, because we know that that should bear out when we do the checking. So I am presuming that this is based in science and working with Freshwater and some of our other science-based partners that this has been included.
Representative Anderson.
Next question. Would these payments pertain only to owned land or rented land as well?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson. I think that's more granular than we are right now at this point. The idea is to get as many acres as possible, and we know there's a large number of acres that are rented, and so the intent would be, if we're trying to get as many acres as possible into a program like this, I would hope that that would include rented acres as well. But that will be the task of the small group to be exploring how that might look.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would encourage that rented land be included. Mm-hmm. And one thing I thought about, in again, your definitions, you have a individual farmer, eligible farmer is an individual over 18. And I thought about somebody who may be in high school, 17-year-old FFAer who has rented some farmland, and by this language would not be eligible for this program because his age is not up to 18. Could somebody from the department give us a ballpark figure on the percentage of this funding that would go to administration? They're going to be doing monitoring and evaluation, and it's going to take quite a bit of time. Can somebody from the department comment on that?
I see Peter approaching the table. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Peter Chessa. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Representative Anderson, we typically, already in the certification program, we have 6.5% admin fee, and key to that is we always say up to 6.5, because typically we're able to administer these programs similar to like what we did with the pilot program for the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program underneath that 6.5%. So to answer your question, 6.5 would be the ceiling.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So would that cover all the monitoring and evaluation you have to do in the reports as well that would be part of this program?
Peter.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, it would. And that's one of the reasons why we thought that this pilot program could fit nicely within the certification program as it currently operates. Again, it's that efficiency that Representative Purcell mentioned at the beginning of the conversation about this bill that we thought we could provide.
Representative Anderson. Or Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to add on to that, so on the A3 amendment, the lines, I believe it's 119 and 120. This was a little bit of a language tweak that we made this week as well to clarify to the department that it's not every single field necessarily, but it is a targeted strategic approach to that that accountability piece and the transparency piece. Also, there is a fiscal note, but this is outdated, of course, already. So in speaking with the Department of Agriculture and the team there, the idea is that the cost will be less than what you see on the fiscal note in front of you as well.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Next question. Somebody mentioned the data that's being collected in the program, public or private. Interesting that the data in the lawns to legume program is private data, and this originally was going to be public. Is that still the case in your new DE amendment?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson. My understanding is that because of the jurisdiction that the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program has and nesting this underneath there makes all of this information private. And that's a reaction to the conversation we had last month on this bill.
Representative Anderson.
One last question or comment. I've heard the phrase used already, cover crop cops that'll be having to make sure these practices are being done. And would you also work with SWCDs in compliance, or would this strictly be folks from the department?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson. That's a great question. That's a piece that I was unwilling to change in this. So we're going through the Department of Agriculture, but those funds go to those local soil and water conservation districts. We know that they're the boots on the ground. We know that they're the folks who have the relationship. And already with the Ag Water Quality Certification Program, they are already partnering with the SWCDs. So we thought that this would be fairly seamless to have these two entities working together in this way.
Representative Anderson.
Just one final comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I know back in 2015 when we passed buffer law, a lot of SWCDs were very reluctant to take on enforcement because they did not want to be viewed in an adversarial relationship with farmers. And this could be somewhat like that on a lesser degree, but I would be cautious on having the SWCDs be the cover crop cops in this. So thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson. That is not the intention at all. The intention is this is voluntary, and in order for folks to get the credit, then SWCD folks can come to the property in order to give them their flowers and not to bring a baseball bat. So that is also the intention, is not to have SWCDs do enforcement, but instead sort of the rewards.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know what? My question was answered on the additional 40 cents, but I do have one more question on that. So we adopted the A3, correct? I don't remember voting, but did we adopt the A3 yet? Because...
Yeah, thanks for that question, Representative Burkle.
The only... Because it looks to me like it deletes the carbon credit section, subdivision 4. Am I right on that? Maybe Colby Sullivan.
So we didn't make any motion because we don't have the bill currently in our session.
Okay.
So we're just hearing the DE1 and then the A3 to the DE1. So should it had the bill in our possession, then we would have amended the DE1 with the A3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could Mr. Sullivan, so am I reading that correctly? It would delete the subdivision 4 carbon credit section?
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and Representative Burkle, yes, you are reading the A3 correctly in that it deletes the subdivision 4 carbon credits that's in the DE1 on lines 3.25 to 3.28. But on the back of the A3 amendment, in the place of that subdivision, there'd be new uncodified language that would require the department to convene stakeholders and report back to the legislature about the establishment of a carbon credit program.
Representative Burkle.
Nothing further, thanks.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. So with the insertion of within the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, is the intent then that farms that are already certified, are they eligible for the funding then?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jacob. This was a discussion that I had at length with the Department of Agriculture. I'm not ready to include farms that are already certified in just yet, but that is under discussion, and that is a conversation I imagine continuing.
Representative Jacob.
So just I'll use my farm for example. I'm up for recertification. Probably makes sense to let those lapse so that you could then qualify for this.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jacob, there's not a program that exists as of yet, so you get to do whatever you like on your farm, but this is just to look into perhaps if there were to be something. And part of not nestling this under the Ag Water Quality Certification Program is not just for the privacy, although that's a nice benefit. It's also to, because there's a lot of those shared goals, as well as staffing. So it's very possible that these two programs may, some point down the future, meld some more. But right now, partially just so I can keep my head around, and my co-authors, who couldn't be here, Representative Kraft or Representative Olson, we can sort of keep our hands around what our program is and not fully melding into the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. That may happen one day. But at this point, the idea is to keep them somewhat separate.
Yeah. Representative Jacob.
Yeah. I would just say that, first of all, I only use my farm as an example because there would be other people in a similar boat, right? So wondering how that would play out. No further questions. Thank you.
Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Vang. As this is an informational hearing, this questions to the Department of Agriculture. You know, we have this payment inspection fee, which is 44 cents, I think, currently as of January 1st, 2024. I'm not a farmer in Minnesota, so can you tell me, when you do an inspection, what does that entail, and can you give me the details of what inspection really entails in detail?
Peter?
Madam Chair, members, Mr. Cha, Representative Cha, I might have to phone a friend, and if I don't have a friend, I might have to get back to you on that. Okay, I have a friend.
All right, if you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Margaret Wagner, and I manage the non-point fertilizer section. So to provide a few examples, when we talk about our regulatory programs and inspection, the department is responsible for the storage, transportation, and use of fertilizer in the state of Minnesota. So there are standard and reoccurring inspections, as well as we respond to emergencies or spills. So within that area and preview, those regulatory programs are supported with that inspection fee. So for example, a facility that's storing anhydrous ammonia fertilizer would have inspections to make sure that the products are properly stored, that all of the safety mechanisms that are required are in place. And so those are the types of things that happen in inspections. And you can imagine storage of anhydrous is one example of a type of product that would need to be inspected in both the storage, use, and transportation.
Representative Cha.
And how many full-time employees do you have dedicated to this inspection program for the state?
Margaret.
Yeah. Madam Chair. Representative Cha, I'll have to get back to you on the exact FTEs, and that's a number that we could get to you very quickly.
Representative Cha.
No further question. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think I'm correct in saying this, but the inspection fee that Representative Cha asked about is separate from the AFRAC fee. Is that correct, ma'am?
Margaret.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. That is correct. Yep, that 40 cents is a dedicated fee that goes into a separate account, and that is allocated to support the research and the administration of AFRIC. So those are separate accounts.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if you administer that program, is it a valuable program?
Margaret.
Yeah. Chair, Representative. The AFRIC program is very valuable, And we know that that research directly translates into updates to our best management practices, both the promotion and the outreach required for farmers to understand and adopt those practices related to production of all our major crops in Minnesota.
All right. Further discussions? Seeing none, closing remarks, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to all the testifiers, both who signed up and who were called down to help me. Thank you especially to House Research as we continue to work and make edits to this bill. A couple of points I would like to make. I agree. I think seeing how the private sector has looked at carbon credits is a great model. I wish they were scaling. I wish they were growing to the point that we know we need to do for our state to meet our carbon reduction goals. And if they were able to do that, that would be wonderful. But I'm excited to look at the possibility of what matching a program to the scale of what we're actually looking for. So I really look forward to what the working group might get to do should this be included in the omnibus bill. And also, I like to always say, especially to my children, that change is hard. And 16 years ago when AFREC was first talked about, I know there was a lot of consternation and a lot of pushback on that fee at that time. It's now part of lay of the land, and so I think it's worth looking at, and I think it's been really valuable to have the discussion around Representative Hansen's bill, Representative Fisher's bill, this bill with Representative Olson and Kraft and I, to really talk about how we want those funds to best go back and serve the farmers. So I really appreciate all of the feedback. I appreciate all of the collaborative nature that I've had with folks, a lot of folks in this room, and appreciate the additional time to have an informational hearing on this bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Purcell. So, members, that is all the business of our bills that we are hearing for today. I know with the discussion around nitrates, I just want to thank the committee and stakeholders for their contributions. I've taken this approach. I've always welcomed members and stakeholders to contribute to how can we address the nitrate issues that have been alerted to us by the EPA. And although we may have heard proposals that may conflict at some points, but I understand that it would take a multifaceted approach to make sure that we can get the best out of every little nugget that we can get up in terms of every member's input and stakeholder input and suggestions. And so I value the process that you all have participated in this discussion. So I'm going to talk about a timeline for next week. So next week, as we all may know, it is deadline. So we are hoping to post the DE on Monday. And then Tuesday, we'll walk through the DE, or also the omnibus, and then once and take testimony on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, amendments will be due at noon. So I'm amending our committee rules to have a later amendment deadline. So it will be at noon on Wednesday. And then Thursday, hopefully, we'll mark up and move it out of move it out of committee to Ways and Means. So, any questions from members about process moving forward? Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on the bill we just heard. It makes a very significant change, possibly in a program that's well liked across the state. And this was an informational hearing. The bill is not in our committee as of now. So is it your intention or your thought that the bill will come back here and possibly be part of our bill?
So at this point, I think it's really important for members to kind of hear kind of the latest iteration of this bill. And I guess when we do see the DE, when we can make that, we can, I guess it'll be more clear because I don't have an exact
I think it's pretty organic and fluid right now, so I can't give you a clear answer. But we can definitely have a more conversations to Representative Anderson. Okay. Further discussion or questions about next week? All right. Well, thank you all. Our next meeting is Tuesday, April 16th. This meeting is adjourned.